This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This week, we spoke with two former Secretaries of Defense, William Cohen and Chuck Hagel. Hagel served as Secretary of Defense from 2013 to 2015. He was the Republican senator from Nebraska from 1997 to 2009. He had this message for the men and women of the United States military.
You know who you are. You know the difference between right and wrong. You know why you're there. You have made a commitment and a decision to give your life, your career, to the defense of this country. That's as a noble a thing any human being can do that I know of.
As President Trump continues his efforts to overturn the results of the 2020 election, there's been growing concern among senior officials in Washington that Trump could, quote, invoke the Insurrection Act to mobilize the military. That's according to reporting from The Washington Post's David Ignatius, who adds, quote, the Pentagon would be the locus of any such action, and some unusual recent moves suggest pro-Trump officials might be mobilizing to secure levers of power. Well, a few days after Ignatius's report, all 10 living former secretaries of defense took the highly unusual step of publishing a joint op-ed in The Washington Post. They write, quote, efforts to involve the U.S. armed forces in resolving election disputes would take us into dangerous, unlawful, and unconstitutional territory. When we spoke with him yesterday, Hagel said this to those serving.
You cannot allow yourself to be degraded in any way by partisanship or politics. You've got to stay above it all because you're better than that. You must stay above it.
Hagel spoke at length with On Point senior editor Dori Scheimer. Here's their conversation.
Secretary, thank you so much for your time, and I appreciate you making time for us today. I just want to start by asking about the motivation, how those conversations started among you and the other defense secretaries, and why you felt that urge to publish this op-ed.
Well, I think each of us, all 10 of us, came to similar conclusions as we have watched the dangerously erratic, volatile, unpredictable behavior and words and tweets of President Trump the last 30 days since the election, starting with the election was fraudulent. It was stolen from me. President Trump's constant efforts to overturn the election results, decertify what the electors all came together over the last 50 states to talk about, to certify the election was without incident. There was no fraud. There was no deceit. Honest, clear, and safe election. Then I think the rhetoric increased our concern in the White House with talk of imposing martial law, imposing and activating the Insurrection Act, putting the military in charge of conducting new elections. And certainly with the tape that came out a couple of days ago with his conversation with the Georgia Republican Secretary of State, essentially threatening him to find enough votes to overturn a certified election in Georgia, all of these things together were pretty disconcerting. And we've got to have all great democracies, all democracies must be able to have confidence in peaceful transfer of power. We've always done that. And the military got caught in the middle of this conversation over the last 30 days with using the military to essentially conduct new elections, to decertify what the electors have certified. And this is going to be culminating tomorrow in the Congress of the United States when they meet to accept the certification results of the electors of all 50 states. And the Trump crowd is going to try and throw that off course. They're not going to be successful. It's a fruitless effort. But what it does, it undermines the security, confidence, and trust the American people have and must have in our system, that our system was fair. We are a nation of laws.
I imagine that you never experienced a President Barack Obama coming to you with this kind of thing. But was it a conversation that as Pentagon leaders that you had to prepare for the possibility of a scenario like this? I mean, was it even on your radar to think about it?
No, and I'm sure it wasn't with my 9 other former Secretary of Defense colleagues. I mean, you just didn't worry about it. We have had peaceful transition of power. The loser has accepted the results. We've not had perfect elections over the course of the history of our country, but never any president, incumbent president, moving to overturn the results of the certification of an election when, in fact, there, I think, been close to 50 lawsuits brought by the Trump people. A couple of them decided in the Supreme Court. Not one court has found a shred of evidence that there was fraud in this election. But yet, the continuation of inflaming the American people with protests, with demonstrations, maybe violence tomorrow in Washington and other places, that's very concerning and very worrisome. And the fact that he, as commander in chief, has talked openly in conversations in the Oval Office about enacting the Insurrection Act and declaring martial law to change those results, that's very dangerous. So I think we all kind of came together in thinking about this and what our obligations were as former secretaries of defense. I have great confidence in our military, in the principles of our military. They understand. They swore an oath to the Constitution where they took an oath of office, as we all do in elective office, not to a president, not to a commander-in-chief, not to a party, but to uphold the laws of the land.
This is not the first instance in the Trump administration where there's been questions about Trump wanting to use the military for political purposes. We saw over the summer General Milley apologize for being in uniform in Lafayette Square. I mean, what did you make of that situation? And is it part of like a broader concern about the politicization of the military?
Well, it is part of a larger concern about the politicization of the military. I think what we saw in that occurrence, marching from the White House over to St. John's Episcopal Church, holding up the Bible, clearing the demonstrators, bringing in not just National Guard, but active duty troops to do that for a political purpose, for a political reason. That sent a very clear signal to what President Trump may be thinking, what he's certainly capable of doing. And then, as I said, over the last 30 days, how he's maintained this drumbeat of fraud, and we have to overturn the electors' certification, and the active conversation about using the military to do that. No, that's pretty concerning. None of us, all those 10 former secretaries of defense, have ever even thought about that, never had to think about it, regardless if it was a Democrat, Republican. And we all come from different backgrounds. We've worked for Democrat, Republican presidents, different philosophies about government, but not upholding law and using the military as it is supposed to be used. I think he has flagrantly misused the military. I think the border walls are a good example. He took almost $4 billion from the military bases that $4 billion was going to be used, was appropriated by the Congress for increasing the quality of schools and building new hospitals, the quality of life of our troops. He took that money to build those walls, and he used our military to go down and patrol the wall. So he's had a history of misusing the military.
Yeah, we had a question from a listener come in that I want to ask you about. Her, a lot of family and in her community, a lot of members of the military. And she says in conversations with them that she's heard about an increase in far right views in the military in lower ranks, in some religious, I don't want to use the word extremism, conservatism within the military. First of all, do you feel like that's an accurate portrayal of a shift that's happening in the military? And in your view, I mean, as you were leading it just 5 years ago, is this part of a broader concern now as that aligns with a lot of Trump supporters?
Well, our military, these great men and women who dedicate their lives to our country, the security of our country, are no different in one way than all Americans. They look to their leaders for direction. And when you have leaders trying to politicize every element of our government, of everything, including dismantling our civil service process and our civil service system, to take politics out of government employees, the military will not be untouched by that. And certainly everybody in the military has the right, the duty, responsibility, like all citizens, to vote. Everybody has their opinions. But those opinions must not override your job in the military. And you've got to accept that before you go in the military. And that is primary. So I don't know. I can't attest to that comment one way or the other? Is there creeping more conservatism or extremism or liberalism or any of that creeping into our military? I hope not, but it's the leaders that have to watch that. People respond to their leaders. I was in the Army, and I started as a private first class, a private. I got to be a sergeant, and I watched all of that firsthand. And I, through all the jobs I've had in my life, people respond to leadership. And leaders have to set the pace. They set the tone. They set the style. They set the beliefs. Now, you can have your own belief. You don't have to have a same philosophy about government that your leader does. But the leader must maintain discipline, order, law. And in a military, that is finite. There's no equivocation to that.
You are also a Republican senator. And so I want to ask you about what's happening in Congress tomorrow. A dozen Republican senators saying that they're going to object to the certification of this election. Does that concern you in the same way that President Trump's behavior in suggesting using the military is concerning you?
Yes, it does concern me very much so. Because here you have 12 national figures, national political leaders, and you've got well over 100 in the House of Representatives who are saying, essentially, this election was fraudulent and we need to overturn the election. That's just not true. The facts just don't bear that out. And that's my point about leadership. So when people from these different states that their senators are going through this or they're members of the House, they're saying, well, you know, he's a senator or she's a senator. They must know what's going on. They must know there was fraud. And they know. I just can't believe they don't know better. I mean, like I say, there were 50, maybe four lawsuits brought in every level of court, appellate law, federal law, state law, Supreme Court, and not one succeeded. Not one even got a hearing, not a shred of evidence. And so what these people are doing, these Republican senators and congressmen, they're playing a very dangerous game because they are continuing to play out this fabrication that the president started actually long before the election was held. As you remember, months before, the only way I can lose the election is if it's fraudulent, if the Democrats steal it. Well, this isn't going to end tomorrow, and people will walk away from this saying, believing that this election was stolen, and I'm not going to believe anything anymore. And these guys and these people have who are in these major offices, responsible offices, like the Senate and the House, they have a responsibility. And they take an oath of office just like the military or anybody else. They take an oath of office to the Constitution, not the president, not the political party, not their political beliefs, but law and order. So they do a great disservice to our country, and they fail our country when they pull this kind of stuff.
Yeah, you said 12 senators in the Senate, more than 100 members of the House. I mean, what do you make of this Republican Party? Does it look the same as the one that you left the Senate in 2009? Is this a party that can function in a democratic society?
Well, it's not even a party anymore. It is a party, if you were to refer to it that way, that's lost its way. It's lost its North Star. It's lost its bearing. It's the Trump Party. For example, what does the Republican Party stand for today? The Republican Party that I joined and I've been a part of, I'm still a Republican, but that only in name only. But the Republican Party used to have principles, fiscal responsibility, free trade, foreign engagement, strong alliances. I mean, you go down through that list of the top five or six major priorities of the Republican Party, those are gone. I mean, they are obliterated. And so what is the party and what is the future of the party? And I think it's going to be very difficult for the party over the next 4 years. Who's going to lead the party? What is going to be the party's priority? How would they intend to govern? What should they be doing about the big issues? Not political fighting, but solving problems. How do you solve problems? We've gotten away over the years, and I saw it in my last few years in the Senate in the late 2000s. I saw that compromise, for example, oh, that's terrible. Boy, if you compromise with those evil Democrats, we'll throw you out. We'll run a primary opponent against you. You have to be 100% right all the time with the party, with what we tell you. You are. And that obliterates the whole responsibility of representative government, because when you're a senator or a congressman, people expect use your judgment. You use your judgment. Now, you listen to people. You try to be informed, try to understand, but in the end, it's your judgment. And that can't be based on an absolutist kind of a religious doctrine. We're absolutely all right all the time. You're absolutely wrong all the time. And that's kind of where we've gotten. So that polarization has led to paralysis. We haven't governed.
I'm so curious to hear from you because you both sat in front of the Senate to be confirmed, and you also sat, you know, as a senator through those confirmation processes. I mean, there's real concern that Joe Biden will not be able to get his Secretary of Defense confirmed in this divided Senate. What do you make of that?
Well, I think it just adds more to the irresponsible actions of some of the senators. The approach I always took in confirming nominees of a president, whether it was a Democrat president or Republican president, and I served during both times of 8 years of Clinton and 8 years of George W. Bush, I always took the approach that if the candidate is qualified and you go through background vetting, questions should be asked absolutely about personal conduct, legal conduct, everything. But if that person's qualified, regardless of whether I agree with them philosophy-wise, and it's the president's choice, you should confirm that person. And that should be, I think, your North Star on these conferees. If you have a legitimate concern about the qualifications or was the person involved in legal problems and so on, so I get that. But a president, I think, deserves who he or she wants to be in his cabinet to help him with the responsibilities to run the executive offices in the government. If they're competent, then you should give them to the president. If they screw up or they make mistakes or if it adds to real problems, then that's down the road. You can deal with that too. But I do fear, especially if the Republicans continue to control the Senate. Now, obviously, the two Georgia Senate seats up for re-election today are going to be key, as everybody knows, to who controls the Senate. But I hope if the Republicans maintain control of the Senate, they will take the advice of not only me, but so many of my colleagues that I serve with, both Republicans and both Democrats, that's the way to do it. And not to hold hostage and hold our government hostage, because when you do this, what you're doing, you're hurting the government. You're hurting our country. You're hurting the future of our country when you do this. And it's just for raw political partisan reasons.
I'm curious for your perspective on, we've seen in the Trump era so many acting positions, so many positions held open, not going through the confirmation process. And from the Pentagon perspective, like, what is the cost of having these positions be in an acting role and not going through that Senate confirmation process?
Well, there's no question. An agency or a department like DOD pays a price when you don't have senior civilian leadership in place, politically appointed by the president, his or her people, and confirmed by the Senate. And when you don't fill those jobs, it paralyzes internally the mechanisms and the processes that are so key in departments and agencies to function. So the government functions, whether it's interior or agriculture, doesn't make any difference. But the Pentagon is all about national security, the defense of this country. And there's every element of that. There's intelligence, there's the components of troops overseas, their alliances, their relationships. And when you don't have that, those people in place that have and must use a process to get to recommendations for policy so that the president can lead the country, whether you agree or disagree, that's irrelevant to this argument that we're having here. You've got to have it, because it just stops everything. When you don't have those people in place, what happens is the people below who report to these undersecretaries, assistant secretaries say, well, I can't make that decision. That's above my pay grade. That's a decision that's got to be made by the assistant secretary, the undersecretary. Well, we have no undersecretary or we have no assistant secretary. So it paralyzes government. Very dangerous.
I want to ask you about Joe Biden's nominee for your old position, General Austin. He will need a waiver. What do you make of this situation where someone who hasn't reached that time out of uniform service stepping into the role of defense secretary?
Well, first, I know Lloyd Austin very well. I served with him when I was Secretary of Defense. He did a tremendous job as CENTCOM commander. There's no finer soldier than Lloyd Austin. His integrity, his character, his professionalism. Now, that said, I'm not one who is very enthusiastic about appointing former career senior military officers. One of the reasons is that, first of all, the Secretary of Defense job is a political job. You don't need to be an expert on every element of the Pentagon. You got a whole city full of experts, and you got probably 950 generals and admirals that you can call upon for advice, and you should call upon for advice. That's not the priority. The priority should be being able to navigate the interest of the Pentagon and national security in this shark-infested water place that you're dealing with the Congress all the time, different views about what we should be doing or not doing, Republican, Democrat, Appropriations Committee, Armed Services Committee. You're dealing with the White House all the time. The National Security Council many times attempts to overreach, I think. I mean, Bob Gates and Leon Panetta wrote books and mentioned that in the books. You're dealing with the press, and we have to have the press. The press have to know what's going on. You have to give them accessibility, but, you know, it's a judgment call. Well, you don't let them, you can't let them in on everything, but you've got to let them in on as much as you can. You're dealing with the internal career people, the professionals. You're dealing with each branch of service and all the other dynamics that play into that. And a retired general or admiral has never navigated all of that. And political instincts are important. The whole background and how generals and admirals develop, how they think for 40 years. And we've had great ones and still have great ones. I'm not sure how conducive all that is to being able to run the Pentagon. Not because they're incompetent, not at all, but there's another downside to this, is that if you've got someone who's never done this before, the White House will have a tendency to micromanage the Pentagon because they'll put their people in charge. And you've got to have at least a political a sense and a political awareness and astuteness that they're trying to do that. I mean, that's just part of the friction of this business. I mean, National Security Council, White House, yeah, I get it. Every president has wanted to reach in and, well, let me do this. I'd like to run this. I get that. I mean, that's just part of democratic government. But you can't let it overrun the Pentagon. What the National Security Council says as far as the management every day of the Pentagon. So it's got to be a balance. But I'm going to support Lloyd. I think this is not the time to have a political fight over this. There will be an issue because you said he needs a waiver. There's some Democrats who've come out and said they will not vote for the waiver. They've all made their good reasons. And so that's just, I think, an unnecessary part of this that we wouldn't have to go through and shouldn't have to go through. But Lloyd Austin brings great ability and talent to the department, and I wish him much success.
Have you spoken to him since he's been nominated?
I have not.
No.
I have not.
I'm hoping that you can speak directly to the men and women of the military. You know, we have a lot of stations with heavy military populations. And what is your message directed at our military service men and women about the moment that we find ourselves in and the possibility of Trump wanting to use them in a political way?
Well, my message to them, it's a consistent message that I have relayed and given through all my years as Secretary of Defense, Chairman of the President's Intelligence Advisory Board, United States Senator, President of the USO, everything I've ever done that involved veterans and troops is very simple. You know who you are. You know the difference between right and wrong. You know why you're there. You have made a commitment and a decision to give your life, your career, to the defense of this country. That's as noble a thing any human being can do that I know of. And you cannot allow yourself to be degraded in any way by partisanship or politics. You've got to stay above it all because you're better than that. You must stay above it. And I understand emotion. I understand it all. But you're more disciplined. You're trained to be more disciplined. And when you take that oath of office, that's a serious matter. that oath of office swearing allegiance to the Constitution. That's not partisanship. That's not a political leader, a president, a political party. No, your job is the defense of this country, and you stay focused on that, and you be proud of that, and you reinforce each other.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Stay well.
Thank you for doing what you're doing. Appreciate it very much.
That's former Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel speaking to On Point senior editor Dori Scheimer. You can also hear our hour-long conversation with former Defense Secretary William Cohen, where he told us the United States risks becoming a land of the law of rule rather than the rule of law. That's in our podcast feed or at onpointradio.org. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.